Thanks. Agenda paper 4 continues the committee's discussion about contribution-based promises. At the last meeting, we revisited the scope, and the committee agreed to proceed with the agreed scope. And this meeting, we're just looking for some direction in terms of the measurement attribute that the committee would want to proceed with. And in the future, we'd hope to bring a more detailed discussion about the nitty-gritty details of that particular measurement attribute. The ones that we have looked at are the ones that we think would be applicable to these types of promises. So we've looked at off-the-shelf kind of measurement attributes, fair value, the insurance exposure draft measurement, and of course we looked at the measurement proposed in the original interpretation D9. Looking at the costs and benefits of and the pros and cons of each, we've ended up recommending that the committee proceed at least initially with the measurements under D9, and of course we'd have to redebate a number of issues that would have arisen in the comment letters in response to D9 in the November meeting. Does any I'll turn it over to the committee for questions or comments.
Comments, reactions? I think we had to go through this process, and I think it was, I thought, well done. Scott?
My comment was kind of along those lines. We've kind of gone through this deep thinking process again and came back to where I think we were, most of us, kind of intuitively headed in the first place. And I think all the previous discussions we've had on this while we were talking about various things, I think it became clear that we were all most comfortable with the D9 route as the most promising one. So now we're at that place after a more formal, thinking process. But I think this is the way forward. I'm not sure we're going to get to the end here, because we obviously tried it once with D9 and stopped, and the reasons that caused us to stop and the board to take over and all that, they could come up again. But I think this is the route that stands the most chance of getting us there.
Other comments and reactions? Tony?
I agree completely that this is taking the D9 approach is the best way forward. I guess just an observation on it says several times in the paper that we're going to exclude promises with vesting conditions. I continue to believe that narrows it too much, and that there are lots of these that will contain vesting conditions. So probably something personally I'd like to come back with, but otherwise I completely support the approach the staff have taken.
Manuel and I were talking about that yesterday. Does anybody recall why we excluded plans with vesting conditions in the first place? We couldn't, from our memories in the recordings of the meeting, get back to it. And I would think a large number of these kinds of plans would have the traditional, you work for us 5 years before the benefit vests. Scott?
This is a long time ago, probably before any of us currently on the committee were actually on the committee. I think part of the problem was the concern that when you've got the plans that have a guarantee, for example, so you get the return on, the S&P 500 guaranteed to be at least 5%, that the guarantee may have a vesting condition. So if you work for at least 10 years, the guarantee kicks in. Otherwise, it's just whatever the return on the S&P is. And I think when the committee was talking about all of that, it got too confusing when the guarantee applies to some participants but not to others, and the higher of option applies to some but not to others. And so it was just, all right, let's assume that the provisions apply to everybody. Don't worry about vesting. I think that's why it was. It wasn't kind of the basic, you're not entitled to anything unless you work 10 years vesting. I don't think that vesting was the concern. It was the possibility for vesting requirements to cause different options to kick in that was troubling, I think.
So if, following on from that, so it might have been more a case about it being the measurement and attribution problem rather than the scope in particular.
Yes, I think it was, you know, more of the this is complicated enough without considering the possible permutations that vesting provisions could kick in. And so let's just take that off the table. I don't think it was a conclusion that if there's a vesting condition, you know, all of our thinking is inapplicable. It was just trying to make the issue narrow enough so that we could think about it more clearly.
Well, I understand the concern about having the guarantee vest differently than the contributions do. But following up on Manuel's comment, if we ultimately make this a scope carve-out, does that mean that you're in D9 or whatever we come up with after it vests, or if there's a vesting condition, you never account for it?
I always thought that what it meant was that once the vesting is done, you're in this.
You're in.
But
okay.
I don't know that we ever talked about it enough.
I can't remember
what D9 said.
Perhaps we should bring it back.
Yeah, we need to think about that.
Yeah.
That's where you were going, Tony? Okay, with that in mind, no objections, plan to bring this back in November. Sounds like we've got a big meeting in November.
Yeah.
Andrew, did you want to get in on this? I'm sorry, I didn't see you there.
No, I support the general direction heading for D9. Really just a question or small clarification. Having talked about the scope at our previous meeting, would it be fair to say that the D9 approach effectively then pulls the scope back to promises with a out of this population of problematic promises, the D9 approach would then pull that back to promises.
It does in a way because it subdivides the set, yeah, and then it becomes a question of how you subdivide that set. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah. Okay, that's what we'll do.
Thank you.
We're now an hour ahead.